This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Last week marked the 20-year anniversary since a group of housekeepers at UNC Chapel Hill negotiated a landmark settlement with the university. The deal provided better wages, career training programs, and more for the workers. The movement was led by the UNC Housekeepers Association, and joining me now are two leaders of that group, Barbara Prayer and Marcia Tinnen, help lead UNC Housekeepers Association through years of negotiating with the university. Barbara, Marcia, welcome to the program. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also with us today is Al McShirley. He's a civil rights lawyer. He represented the UNC Housekeepers. Welcome back, Al.
Thank you, Frank.
Marcia, let me ask you, you and Barbara, one of the people who spearheaded this group. Tell me more about what you were experiencing at the time before you began organizing.
We were experiencing low pay, a lot of bad treatment from management handed down to the supervisors, and such things, if what I mean is bad treatment, we could be 5 minutes late from work, and I mean to get into work, and we could be written up about that, or we could be written up about anything simple.
Right. And so, Barbara, what I'm guessing, and if I could ask you to sit up just a little bit closer to that microphone, this treatment had been going on for quite some time. That's just a guess, but if that's true, what caused you to decide to sit down and or stand up and organize at that moment?
Well, what Marcia failed to say, well, Marcia was there. I had just started working there. Had never worked in those kind of conditions. I came out of a textile that closed. And I was just appalled at people, first of all, what the pay was. And I had a chance to move from housing to academic. And Marcia was in academic. Then I got a real taste of what was going on. And I've always had a big mouth. And I always believe in standing for myself and trying to encourage people to stand up, you know, stand up for yourself.
Yeah, but I'm guessing, again, that people, there were other people who are not like you, who are not used to standing up for yourself. When you began this effort, and I'll ask you too, Marcia, what was it like? Were people rallying behind you, or were they a little cautious?
Very cautious. Yeah. And you have to understand, you were working with people on the lowest pay rail, and it's a lot of discrimination, a lot of things go on that it's fearful for people to step out. And once we got a roll, though, when people seen that everybody wouldn't go get knocked down if you're doing what you're supposed to do, we gradually, over the years, we had a nice movement going with.
Well, tell us about those beginning moments, Marcia, and what it was like. What did you do to begin organizing people?
Like Barbara was saying, the unfair treatment and looking on at it, the more that you seen this unfair treatment, the stronger it made you. And I was kind of a really vocal person, and it made you step on out there. And the more we tried to organize, the more people came. And you can say at that time, there was no such thing as emailing and a lot of cell phones. So that's the part where the students came in at.
Oh, tell us about them and what part they played in this.
They played a big role in contacting other employees, doing a lot of legwork, helping a lot with the organizing, and just basically doing what we need for them to do.
Barbara, did that surprise you that students would step in and stand behind you?
No, it didn't really surprise me because students didn't have anything to lose. It's the workers that had something to lose. But we had a great support with Stuart. I'm trying to think of the name of the young ladies. Once we had an office up on Franklin Street. I can't remember the group, but they all were young ladies, and they worked the butt off of us. Chris Bauman was, Chris probably was a junior. Might have been, he wasn't a freshman, I don't think, the year he started, but he was a hard worker. He'd meet up, and that was a different time than it is now. Workers had a chance to you know, you're getting off at 12 o'clock, so we met in the squad, so you had a chance to meet. But after we started organizing, really, they made it very hard for you to have a meeting on campus. And all out, nobody come from one community.
That's interesting. So your hours were such initially that y'all had a break or you were getting off at 12 mm-hmm, so you could mm-hmm. gather. University figured that out and changed your hours.
Yes, they changed it from 4 that morning, 4 a.m. that morning to 12 noon. And then they came in and switched it off to 12 midnight to like 7 in the morning. They did that on purposely to keep people from meeting.
And Barbara, you were about to say that y'all came from different communities, so
that's
it wasn't
right.
like you went home and hung out together because you all the, many no, took
you
buses.
Know, you, I mean, when I think out of Hillsborough, I don't think it was 3 of us out of Hillsborough at the time. And you had people out of Roxburgh, Chatham, Chaphill, Durham. So it was very hard once people got off from work together. And after they changed the hour, then they changed the parking thing. So when you get off from work, you got to go because you would get towed because you illegal parking after a certain hour. So.
Al McShirley, how did you get involved in this?
When I graduated from the law school here at Central in 1988, the first black female police officer in the state of North Carolina, her name was Keith Marcellet Edwards, asked me to represent her in a discrimination suit against the university. And that was a long saga, too. And in the process of that, all the housekeepers, Keith had 4 or 5 sisters who were housekeepers, and they all knew about that case and knew that Keith had somehow not lost her job, because if you file a lawsuit for race or sex discrimination, which was Keith's case and also the housekeepers, if you retaliate against them, that's the second case you have against them. So as people heard about Keith, Marcia, and I think there were 35 people came to the first meeting, came up to our office on Franklin Street and said, would I represent them like we were doing Keith Edwards? And that was the beginning of it.
Tell us about, because I know there's a long history, and racism plays an important part in all of this. This is not just job discrimination, race discrimination, and it goes back a long way.
Mm-hmm. Well, the university owned slaves during slavery. So if you think of liberation happening in 1864-65, the university started in 1789. So that gives you 11 plus 64. That's 75 years of slavery that black men and black women were owned by the university, chattel property. They were escheated there if people didn't have a will. And so for
I'm going to stop you there, because that's an interesting and an appalling point that I think we should make, mm-hmm. That if a worker died and they were enslaved by the university then had the right to go out to the original owner and get whatever property that person had.
Yeah, it would be like losing a horse or something.
Yeah.
There's stories in the archives about families, particularly in the East, in the Black Belt East, where a lot of most of the big plantation, big slave owners were, and if one of them died, an old white guy died, and he did not have any kids or didn't write a good will, the university would send its lawyer out there and get a wagon train and carry all the furniture and things the guy left, and also tie, say, 25 slaves onto the back of the wagon train, and they would walk from Belhaven, North Carolina, say, all the way to Chapel Hill. And then they would be given to faculty members and as house slaves, cooks, child care workers, and housekeepers and groundskeepers, and the black people helped build one of the most beautiful campuses in the South. Some people say one of the most beautiful campuses in the nation.
And those attitudes didn't die hard or perhaps at all in the post-slave era when racial discrimination. In fact, the term used for these jobs was a racial epithet. Right?
Yes. Yeah, the in jobs, they called them. When the civil service job grades were first made in the 1930s, Roosevelt started civil service in Washington at the New Deal. And up until then, all jobs were gotten just from who you know. And then they gradually set up a system. But the system that the university did, which was the model, the prototype for all the whole state of North Carolina, have what they called in jobs, 50, 51, and 52. We still got them. And those were the entry-level jobs for black people. Mm. And then the white jobs started at 52, 53. And so there was a 15%, 20%
the pay grades.
Difference,
okay. Yeah.
You know, in the starting salary right there.
So, Barbara, did you have a sense of that was that race played an important part in all of this?
You know, before I ever came to the university, I'd always heard rumors that about workers from the university and all from the hospital, and I was vowed I never would go. But you vow a lot when you don't have a job, when textile clothes, and I'm just getting divorced. Youngest son just going to school, I need a job, so I came to the university. But, and, you know, we see it not only at the university. I see it everywhere, really. And we look at now, you're talking about, I'm wondering what we're going to go through now. But the university hadn't changed. And not only at the university, all the other campuses, because I sort of was thinking about it. Out of all the UNC system, Carolina is still, I think, the only school that have in-house service. Most places now they contract out to people.
Yeah.
And we were threatened with that a couple of times to contract the jobs out, but I don't think the university could find a way to contract out and get the service that they get now. Mm.
Well, Marcia, tell us what you were asking for initially. What were the initial requests from the university as you began negotiating?
We were asking for fair treatment, higher pay, and training. A training within classes that we could take so that we could move out of those dead-end jobs.
And what happened to you? Were you, because you weren't really a union, did you feel protected and did you feel you had legal protections to even raise these challenges to the university and not lose your jobs?
Well, once we met up with Al and got, you know, under the protection of that.
Got all lawyered up.
Yeah. That made it a lot better that, you know, if they really tried something deeply, deeply wrong, that Al would step in.
How long did it take? It took you 5 years, right?
Yes, it did.
What was happening in those 5 years? What was that like? Were you meeting regularly, weekly, monthly? How often?
Weekly.
Yeah.
Sometimes twice a week. You know, they would try all in their power to be very stubborn, to move on, to make steps in there, to resolve any kind of problems.
Al, can you give us a sense of how the negotiations went in terms of, what was their strategy?
Well, their strategy was, which is still the strategy of most state agencies, if you sue them, is to stall. Certainly a university strategy is to try to go until May and June when the students leave, who they knew were sort of our gophers. They were the people we got to do a lot of the legwork on it, and also intimidation and terrorism. Actually, they did a counter discovery request for every housekeeper's IRS returns, their tax returns. Mm. And we moved to quash that before Judge Brenda Becton. That was our judge over in Raleigh. And we went over there and Judge Becton asked the university lawyer, what did the university care about the income tax returns? And the university lawyer stood up and said, well, we believe that the housekeepers, when they get off work at 11:30 or 12, go to work for some family, you know, and make money on the side and maybe don't report it. That was the underlying threat.
Yeah.
And the judge looked at him and said, I believe, if I read the complaint correctly, the complaint is you don't pay them enough. Why don't you pay them enough so they don't have to have a second job? And granted our motion. That was a highlight. So that's what Marsha's talking about, that we could go to the judge if we saw that they were retaliating, and we did on a regular basis.
What about you had support from students on campus? What was the media coverage like?
The WNC didn't do a very good job. But WCHL and the Daily Tar Heel and the New Chapel Hill Herald that Mark Schultz was the editor of, they made a bundle of new customers off of this case. It went on for 5 years, so it was, you know, like a running story. It had a lot of drama to it.
Talking about the 20th anniversary of the housekeeper's agreement with UNC Chapel Hill today on The State of Things. So WNC, this radio station, didn't want to cover it much, huh?
Yeah, it was back then. The station was over there across from Phillips Hall on campus. And we would regularly, you know, we'd put out a little press release if we were doing a street demonstration or whatever we were doing. And we would go by there and people would say, well, you know, we're not supposed to cover that.
We're not supposed to. Ooh, that is scandalous. If that ever happened again, I would be up in arms. And I tell you what, I would lead the protest against anybody trying to pressure this universe, this station from the university. If that ever happened again, I'm first in line. But too bad it happened then. So let me know what's happened since. There was an attempt to create a union at some point, right, about 2000, Marcia? Was there a union?
Yes.
Yeah. And is the union now still in place? Are the workers still unionized?
Let me get Barbara to speak on this.
You led the union effort?
I did. And to tell, you know, the last, which was about 2 years ago, there were still members, and to me, they were members only because they paid the dues. I don't want to say that was the worst mistake that we made. You learn, but if I had to do it again, I would never go that route.
Because of the dues, it becomes an inhibition.
And workers get the place where I'm paying my dues, what you going to do, what you all going to do. And, you know, the union is workers. And I don't think we had our workers ground in enough to have moved to the union. Because when the union come in, they did a whole different night. The way we could have had meetings, they union meetings were totally different. And then we had started trying to bring in other schools to do the same thing. It had gotten off to a good start, but when the union came in, they took another direction with it. But I just think we weren't strong enough in being in a right-to-work state, working for the state. So you got a real hurdle there.
But I know you're retired, but how are conditions by the time you're retired? Did they improve after the association's agreement?
You know, I can't say. My last 2 years there, I had been written up, fired, and I was in agreement thing with universities. So I had to step back some. The pressure they put on you, I mean, I was wrote up, suspended for completely fabricated story from a supervisor in a room with 30-some people. They said it didn't happen, but the universal went to drug it along. So I ended up doing that last 2 years. I went and found me another job. I worked 2 full-time jobs, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, just to make sure that I was covering myself. But
Marcia, I don't have too much time left, but I want to ask you generally how you felt things went and if things improved generally for folks or not much.
It improved some after we had went through the grievance and won it. You could see things were opening up for the classes and whatever, and the pay went up some. But right now, I really can't say because I'm not there to know if things are better.
Well, I'm going to thank you all for being on our program today. Barbara Prayer and Marcia Tinnen both helped lead the UNC Housekeepers Association 20 years ago in a landmark settlement. Al McShirley is a civil rights lawyer who represented the housekeepers. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, live music, Mandolin Orange is next. Stay tuned.